Good evening, everybody. Hannah Stanley here with you, filling in for Nick D tonight. I will be with you until 5 a.m. Who's in for opening bell? Is it Steve Grzanich?
Paul Lisnick.
Oh, Paul, that's right. I looked ahead. We'll get to say hi to Paul. So if you're with us for the next 3 hours, you get to say hi to Paul as well. So many things coming up on the show. Very, very excited. Very excited. Coming up at 4 a.m. to talk to our royal watcher, Fred Weintraub, who you guys might know from the Jam TV show on WCIU. And I've actually talked to him before. I can't remember. It was definitely an overnight because he's joining us live from London. I sat up properly when I said that, from London. Occasionally, I wish England would take us back. And so I'm a little bit more fascinated than some people with not necessarily the royal wedding, but the royals in general. I think Downton Abbey helped with that, too. The Crown. Did you watch The Crown? Are you into The Crown, Dan?
I have not seen it. It looks interesting, though.
Yeah, that's one that everybody tells me that I have to watch, and I haven't watched it yet, so I'll get into it. But I think the second season just released, because that's a Netflix thing.
Yeah, within the last week and a half.
Is that dropping? Is that like an album drops?
I think it is.
Is that the per
TV shows as well? Yeah.
The proper vernacular? Is that what the kids say? That's probably not what Fred would call it. A royal watcher. He will be on at 4 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock hour. Man, those pesky Facebook people. I don't know that I'm cool with this. They released a statement today that they have software that can identify your face in pictures that you're not tagged in. I got a problem with you people. I'm not necessarily thrilled with this. I think they mean well. I do. Some of them, but I'm not sure that I like it. I want to know what you think, and that's going to be in the 3 a.m. hour. We're also going to be talking about genetic traits. We're going to probably talk about sleep positions. Sorry for those of you who can't sleep currently, but we'll tell you what it means when you do sleep, what your positioning means. And is your spouse your best friend? I would say that mine is. But we'll talk about whether or not that's cool. That's all kosher. What's today? Is today Wednesday, right? We just moved over into Wednesday?
Yes.
All right. So we've got a couple of days left of school for the kids. See, for me, it's Wednesday, and so then I'll be done with work, and so that day is over. The kids are just, by the time I get home, they're just starting to get up and arise. It's kind of, I love doing the shift. It's great. And I love the listeners, 312-981-7200. You can join us live, call or text in. But it really messes with you.
It is an upside down, definitely. It is one of those things where you just kind of, you get used to it eventually, but there's always something just a little off about everything.
How long have you done the shift?
I started in 2008, so...
So almost 10 years.
Yeah, I'm closing in on 10 years next year, 9 years.
Wow. That's a long stint for any radio gig.
Yes. Yes, it is.
I promoted this when I was doing Crosstalk with Patty Vasquez, but we are going to be talking about things that you hate. And Patty had a great one, Game of Thrones. I did not expect that to come out of Patty's mouth. I thought she would be a GOT person. She's not. But that made me think of something that she is, which is a Doctor Who person. I am not. But I don't hate it. I just don't get into it. Do you like Doctor Who?
No, I'm kind of just confused by it all.
And right. She's like whipping out the 11th Doctor, and this one has a trench coat, and that one's a woman. I don't understand any of it. There's a blue mailbox. And it's not called Brexit. It's called something else. The Tardit or the
TARDIS. Yeah.
Okay, TARDIS. So close to Brexit. That's going to come up in a 4 a.m. hour when we talk to Fred about the royals and our... What are we? Are we the stepchild? We are the kid. According to King George and Hamilton, we had an arrangement when we went away, when we left England. But we're sort of the... prodigal kid that left. We're like, screw you, parents. We're out of here. We don't like being oppressed by your religion. We're out of here. We're getting on boats and we're going across the ocean. And then we're going to declare our independence. So all of that is coming up. So if you have something, and this is going to go two different ways, our conversation, because I'm allowing it to go two different ways because it really was going to go naturally. So now I'm just putting into the ground rules. It can either be things that everybody loves that you hate, and mine is The Sound of Music. I have many, but The Sound of Music is the most pressing because it was on the other day and it's still not done. It started Tuesday and it's still on. They have yet to sing Edelweiss. It is the longest movie ever. Or it can be something that you love that everybody hates. So that is really going to fall into the guilty pleasure. Now, this can be TVs, TV show, movies, music, food. It can be whatever. A car. Does everybody like the Volkswagen Beetle? I don't know. Whatever we're talking about. Is there a car you really like?
My friends and I all owned Monte Carlos for a bit. Like, we all, three of us of the six guys, had Monte Carlos randomly, so.
Randomly, or because you really loved them?
Well, it was one of those, like, two guys had it, and then I bought one off of a friend of mine, and then he ended up getting another one, so.
Okay. But did any of your friends go, those suck, those are terrible?
Nah, I don't think so.
All right. I don't get into cars. Some people really get into cars. And they'd be like, oh, everybody loves Ferrari and I hate them. But that's not. But my point is, we're not getting. Oh, see, we're already getting a very, very good texter. 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break because I want to jump into this topic immediately. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN.
The hills are alive with the sound of music. With songs they have sung for a thousand years.
That's Julie Andrews, and I'm Hannah Stanley. And normally you would be hearing Nick DiGilio, but I get to fill in for him tonight with Dan Segrue. And we are talking tonight about things that we don't like. I don't even know that I'm embarrassed by the fact that I don't like The Sound of Music. And I like the music. That's a lovely song. And Julie Andrews, talented, gifted, beautiful. Christopher Plummer, dreamy. The kids, cute, whatever. But I Am 16 going on 17. That's how many hours that movie is. 16 going on 17. It's brutal. If you have something that you don't like, that you're not even necessarily embarrassed about, but like everybody likes, Patty Vasquez chimed in with hers, which was Game of Thrones. I don't watch it either, but I don't have, that's on HBO, I think, right? So I don't have HBO and I never get into it. But yeah, some people are just all about it. That's all that's on Facebook when Game of Thrones is coming on, you know, because that's all people are talking about. Winter is coming, even though it's June. So let us know what those are. 312-981-7200. We have really good comments coming in already to our text line. 309 says the Beatles are overrated. What? I don't know that I think. I don't know about that one. But this is the whole point, is that we don't agree, because I would be one of the people who thinks the Beatles are great. But I get where you would not necessarily. I can understand why somebody would be like, they're not the greatest band ever. And some people would have full on physical fist fights over that. I love Kelly's comment. Kelly texted into 312-981-7200. ABC's Scandal is overrated. Oh, I'll go you one better. Shondaland is overrated.
The whole Thursday night block on ABC.
Yep. I mean, are you kidding me? It's Grey's Anatomy, like part pie. They have so many. I don't even know what season we're on. They jumped the shark like season two. I walked away from it. Like mid-show, I was like, done. I'm out of here. something weird happened with the wedding. I was like, it's too much. Shondaland.
That's a show that's kind of on in the background. My wife watches, and like I'm on the laptop on the couch.
You're booking a show. You got working on to stuff. Do. And
it's just I don't know what's going on with that show.
Someone else texted in kale. Are you a kale guy?
I am not a kale guy. I don't hate kale.
Right.
But I don't go out of my way to eat it.
Okay, you don't go out of your way to eat it, but do you avoid it?
I don't avoid it.
Kale, kale is the food equivalent to The Sound of Music. Like you start, you take a bite of kale now, and Thursday you finish your first bite. It's very fibrous.
Have you heard the Dave Bennett Rahm Emanuel story?
I know Dave Bennett loves kale. Tell me about. I don't know the Rahm Emanuel version.
Rahm grows it in his garden, and so one morning he brought it in for Dave, and they made a smoothie, I believe, on the air.
That is a good use of kale because you can break down a lot of that. The other trick with kale is you hold the stem in one hand and you put your other hand, you wrap it around the kale, and then you pull. Like, so you pull the stem out, and that takes a lot of what you need.
Oh,
to get rid of immediately. Little trick for you. But you do need to break it down if you're going to actually eat it in a salad. So you got to put it in an acid. You've got to have a lemon or something that's going to start making that go away. Kale is really, really, really challenging. But some people just hate it. And everybody was like, oh, kale, it's so good. What the kale? And I didn't think it needed as much. It had really good PR for a while. They clearly spent a lot of money, kale, on their branding. 815 is agreeing with me. The Sound of Music is a long movie. It's 2 hours and 54 minute runtime. And when it's on TV, you can add half an hour commercials. Try over an hour. It is a 4 hour runtime on television. So for every hour of television, it's typically like 43 minutes of actual programming. So it's 15 minutes an hour or more of commercials. So yeah, trust me, it's 4 hours. So 2 hours and 54 minutes. That's why you get up and leave. Cause like I've seen her make those outfits out of the curtains so many times. It's just so hard. 773 says, I hate potatoes and my friends think I'm nuts no matter what kind. All right. Now we have to explore this. This is very interesting. French fries. Do you hate French fries as well? 773 texter, please let me know this. Is it too starchy for you? I'm going to need a little bit of explanation on this one. And feel free to call 312-981-7200. We can take your calls. Oh my God, 412 text San Francisco is overrated. Also going to need a little bit more explanation on this. San Francisco is very expensive. Very expensive.
Very much so.
And you think California and the nice weather? San Francisco's getting pretty north. You're getting more of the Pacific Northwest kind of weather. Fog, rain, cooler. A lot of tech people, which is nice, but a lot of tech people housing prices. Do you ever watch those HGTV shows where they're house hunting?
Sure.
They're like, oh, well, they decided to buy their first starter home in San Francisco and their budget's $950,000. And like, where are you getting this money?
Right. And they're like a nurse and like an artist. And it's like, what?
Yeah. He's a bicycle repair person. And she's paying off medical bills because she's the nurse. Nurses should make that kind of money. But I don't think they do. 708, I hate the term Grabowski. Huh. I like the fact that you're thinking outside the box, but that's, do you find it insulting or you just hate calling people Grabowskis? Cause that's a Chicago thing, right?
Pretty much. I imagine.
Yeah. It's a Bears fan thing. Grabowskis. We've got some others. Somebody hates parades. I get that. They just seem so blah.
I hate parades as well. I will usually duck into a local establishment while it's going on.
I wonder what kind. Are you purchasing tea?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, parades to me, like if we're going to Disney and there's a Disney parade, do it. That is full on entertaining start to finish. But if I'm going to go, like they're lighting the lights in my little downtown, nah, I'm good. I don't need to see the local Boy Scout troop march by. And at what point did parades, they started deciding that they needed to throw candy? Like our St. Patrick's Day parade, they throw candy. It's a candy holiday now. And Tootsie Rolls hurt when they hit you. Please stop throwing candy. Yeah, parades suck. The only parade I want to see is that there is Bill Geist from CBS Sunday Morning, Willie Geist's father, also from CBS. He covered a standing still parade where the town was so small that everybody in the parade just stood still and then the town walked around them and it was done in like 5 minutes.
That's pretty awesome.
I would go to that because that's novel and fantastic. 640 goes to the music side of this. Things that are overrated in music: Radiohead, comedians, Will Ferrell, alcohol, microbrews, and in general, anything pumpkin spice. Here's the deal with pumpkin spice. Pumpkin spice has been over-commercialized. When they first came out with pumpkin spice lattes, that was pretty tasty. But now there's like pumpkin spice t-shirts and pumpkin spice Cheerios, by the way, not good. Yeah, I'm with you on the pumpkin spice. It's just too much. It's too much. It's too much. Dan, you have some that you told me.
Yeah, so I'll go both sides of it. Food, a trend that like everybody seems to love, but I hate are small plates. I am not a fan of them on several levels. Like, one, if I'm going out to eat, I want to have a meal. Like, I don't want appetizers. Mm-hmm. You know, I know it's variety and I know it's sharing, but like, I want my plate to have my food and I want a lot on it. If I'm going out,
family style, nothing.
Right. You know, well, I mean, family style is all right because I'm getting a lot of food.
Yeah, because you're getting your own. Yeah.
And they just, and like, I want my meals to be relaxed and enjoyable, and like, small plates are a lot of work. And
there is a lot of, like, you have to constantly be planning and figuring out what your next thing is.
Right. It's a lot of work for not a lot of food.
Was it like tapas?
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
and then it became now,
right,
not just that particular type of food.
Right.
And then now everybody's doing this.
Yeah. So
this has not made its way to the suburbs.
Well, that's good.
Come out by us, bring the girls, all three of them, and we'll go to like Olive Garden.
I like it.
Red Lobster.
I am down with Olive Garden and I am down with Red Lobster. Coincidentally, my thing everybody hates but I love is Little Caesar's Pizza.
Oh, yeah.
So I used to live by Addison and Elston, and there's a Little Caesars there, and I would frequent that quite a bit. You know, it's $5, and I'm sure it's not good, but I enjoyed it. I am also a big fan of Papa John's. Like, you know,
you're the one.
Yeah. So people are like, you know, you live in Chicago, you know, you have, right, Lou's and Giordano's within walking distance a lot of times, but those are two pizzas that for whatever reason I still enjoy.
They're your jam.
Yeah, I love them.
No, that is, I will call it a guilty pleasure, especially because you live here. My sister, I talked about earlier, they're going to Florida tomorrow. They, every Friday she goes and picks up, they have five kids, so she goes to Little Caesars and for $20 feeds everybody. That's just, they, you know, walks in and goes, I need like these four pizzas and then we're gone. I think it's $5 even on Friday. I can't remember. But even so, it's way more affordable than ordering four pizzas from somewhere else.
Right.
412 agrees with me. Disney parades are awesome. Yeah, they are. But you know why? Because they put science and there's music and dancing by people who are choreographed and know what they're doing. And they're not throwing Tootsie Rolls at you. That's what's good about Disney parades. We're going to continue this after the news. Please keep those texts coming in and we will take your calls as well. 312-981-7200. I'm Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I'm going to take care of you, Dan Segrew, for playing that song, little earworm. all the way home. Through the rest of this show, I'm going to have that song in my head. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. If you're just joining us, welcome. It's WGN. We are talking currently about things that we find overrated, or something that we, I admitted to Dan the other day that I hated The Sound of Music, and I was kind of tired of hiding that fact, but it was on. My husband loves it. There's the puppet scene. Ugh, the worst. And the goat herder. Ugh. So, call in or text in 312-981-7200. Jerry texts in that they love long TV movies, The Sound of Music at Christmas and The Ten Commandments at Easter. I can't miss either one of them. But I respect your opinion, but I wholeheartedly disagree with you. Patrick, you're on WGN.
Well, good morning, Hannah. Good to hear your voice. Glad you're filling in for Nick this week.
Thank you so much.
You know, I was telling Dan, and I told him I'm going to lose him as a friend. I call Nick's show a lot. I'm not a huge fan of the Smashing Pumpkins. Can't stand them. Cannot. I don't know what it is, and I apologize to anybody that is a fan. Something about Billy Corgan just rubs me the wrong way, and I don't even know the guy. But it drives me nuts. I don't like the Pumpkins. Not a fan of the Little Caesars or the Papa John's.
I don't blame you with either of those.
Well, the family went to Great America one time, and we wanted to try the pizza there. And it was Papa John's. And we took one bite, and all of us looked at each other, and we all agreed. It was like someone took ketchup, poured it on a cracker, and overcharged for it. We just hated it. You know.
I liked Papa John's in college because it was very, very affordable, and I liked the garlic dipping sauce, right? That was, but basically that's just butter and garlic that you put your bread, the crust in. So,
butter makes
everything taste better.
Butter just does it for all. You're right. Butter makes everything great. So. Yeah, you can be forgiven for that.
Yes, but I haven't had it in a very long time with good reason, because there's better pizza to be out there. Smashing Pumpkins, it's really interesting. I'm not a fan of Smashing Pumpkins, but I don't have a problem with them.
I don't understand what it is, and I've tried.
No, I get it, Patrick.
I totally understand.
Like, it was the band that I loved in high school. So I think that's always, one of those things where, you have that attachment to them. But I know a lot of the surrounding stuff turns a lot of people off, and it's turned me off on occasions too. So I totally understand where you're coming from.
All right, now
I tried it. Gish, Siamese Dream, people were playing it. I'm like,
All right, I've got one that's like that. One, I used to wait on Billy Corgan when I worked at Blockbuster Video, and he would bring in demos of his band and ask my friend, who was our manager, would talk to him all the time and was really into it. And he was like, "Yeah, I'll listen to it. You guys sound great, whatever." And so I somewhere floating around are cassette tapes of early Smashing Pumpkins, and I was like, "Yeah, whatever. Here you go. Here's Terminator. It's due on Tuesday."
This sounds like my wife, because my wife used to hang out at Metro and Clubhouse,
mm-hmm.
and would end up partying with him on occasion, and she wasn't impressed. No,
he was nice, but but I get it. But bands are so, they can be polarizing. Here's one that's not going to be popular for me to say. I hate Dave Matthews Band.
Don't tell that to Nick.
I know.
Yeah, Nick's seen him 38 times.
Why do you think I don't I know this is something that maybe we don't podcast this part of the show, so Nick doesn't hear it. But I just don't like them, and it makes me, if they come on, I turn it off. It just, and the kids know to torment me. They're like, "Mom, can we go see Dave Matthews?" And I'm like, "No, you're punished. Go to your room. Give me your iPad."
That's funny.
Well, I've never really listened to enough Dave Matthews to love or hate them, but I know when I was younger, I had dreadlocks down on my butt, and I used to keep them in a mohawk, so everybody said I looked like the violin player. They always compare me to him because he had a mohawk of dreads. So, but that's about the closest I could come to Dave Matthews.
I didn't even know that. That's how far away I stay.
Yeah, well, I can understand. You know, again, I don't listen to enough of them to say. But, see, I have a musical genre that drives everyone nuts. Even when I was playing in bands, all my bandmates hated me for it. I love death metal. Okay, I know it's not everybody's cup of tea, the whole Cookie Monster vocals, the undecipherable lyrics, you know, the crazy blast beat drumming, the down-tuned guitars. It grew on me. I used to hate it. It grew on me, and I love it. And my wife, I'm surprised she hasn't divorced me yet. I absolutely love death metal.
But it's your thing. That's your guilt. See, okay, so this goes with their other caveat of this topic, which is your guilty pleasure. Nobody else gets it, but it's your thing. I like Barry Manilow. I can't smile without him.
I like Barry Manilow too, though, but see, Unity Magic is one of my favorite Barry Manilow songs.
With good reason. I didn't go see him because it was his Christmas show, and I just don't get into whole concerts of Christmas music. Like, I just want to hear Mandy. You know, come on, just play it the way I want it. But, Patrick, you and I are very like-minded, aside from the death metal thing.
Yeah, well, death metal's not everybody's cup of tea.
It's not, but that's what we're saying. You can have your guilty pleasures, and you can also be respected for hating things that everybody loves, like The Sound of Music. It's terrible.
I haven't seen that one yet either. My sister would probably kill me because I know I 2 hours and 54 minutes.
Right. Nah, no. That's if you actually have it on DVD or VHS or whatever. It's just exhaustive. There are scenes that I'm like, I could make this movie 2 hours. There is a scene where they are hiding and they're at the Abbey and they're hiding behind these tombstones. And it's like 5 minutes of hiding. Edit this. Let's go. We get it.
Do they sing while they're hiding?
No, because that would have given them away. But but Rolf, who is the guy who's 17 going on 18, he's the one who ends up giving them up. He turns them in. But they show the flashlight going around every tombstone, and there's like 5 of them. It's so tedious.
You know what would take the sting away for you? I don't know if you're a fan of Mad Magazine.
Yes.
Okay, do you remember back in the day, Mad would do, like, little books, and they were parodies of musicals?
Yes.
They took The Sound of Music and did The Sound of Murder.
No, they did not.
And they did it about a Mob family.
That's...
Say again?
I have to find that.
Yeah, I think that was done in 75. It was called The Sound of Murder.
On it.
And it was all the songs from The Sound of Music, and it was about a mobster. And it was hilarious.
All right.
It was great.
I'm Googling this. I'm going to be finding this. Patrick, thank you so much for your call. It's been great talking to you.
It's been awesome. You have a Merry Christmas. And I hope to hear you again for the rest of the week.
I would love it. Thanks so much. Have a good night.
Okay. Good night. Night, Dan.
Good night, Patrick.
Hey, John, you're on WGN.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So the one thing that, and it's appropriate, you know, time of the year, but the one thing that everybody loves that I just can't stand is the movie Christmas Story.
Dude, you'll shoot your eye out.
Oh, I ever since I was a kid and that movie came out, I look at the kid and I just think he's so annoying. I just, every time it's on, I'm like, nope, can't watch it.
So when they do 24 hours of Christmas Story, you're like, Ralphie, you're dead to me. Off my screen.
Oh, that is a channel that just gets right by.
Yeah, we were actually talking about the Christmas Story house. It's now made into a museum outside of, or actually in Cleveland. We were talking about that yesterday with Dave Plyer when I was going off the air. But I get it. So this place, Castle Noel, which I've been to, which is also outside of Cleveland. It's in a town called Medina. You go at the very end of the tour through all of this Christmas memorabilia and Christmas movie memorabilia. You go up these steps and you meet Santa, which is very cool. And then you go down the slide that Ralphie is pushed down by Santa, which is cool. But I think it would be lost on you, John.
Oh, yeah, totally.
What is something that you like that other people don't?
you know, when it, I think when it comes to, I'll stick with movies. I like Forrest Gump. There are people that just can't stand the movie. But I don't know if it's because I have a son with special needs, and I don't know if it's maybe because I relate. It's more relatable to me. But I just, it's. That's a movie that I could just sit there and watch.
No, I agree with you, and I think you're in the majority for liking Forrest Gump. He won an Oscar for that, Tom Hanks. I don't think you need to be apologetic about that.
Thank you.
Yes. No, you're okay. Is that one of those ones that if it comes on TV, you just sit down and you're like, the day is done, I'm watching this?
And it doesn't matter what part of the movie it is.
I'm that way with Shawshank or A River Runs Through It. If I see either of those on TV, I'm like, all right, hold my calls. This is what I'm doing for the day. I'll book that show later. I'll do that interview in another 2 hours. I want to watch this movie right now. It's a little bit different now because we've got, you know, the DVRs and stuff where we can record things so that you can get to it later. But, Christmas Story, I can see where you would have an issue with it.
Oh, yeah.
I respect you for not liking that, John.
I can't. I don't think I've ever seen the whole thing all the way through. It comes on and it's done.
It's a Wonderful Life, I think, is a little bit like that too, where we just all know so much of it that I don't know that a lot of us have sat down and watched all of it.
Right. Yep.
All right, John. Thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
All right.
Have a good night. Hannah Stanley, we're going to take a quick break, and we are still getting texts and calls. And I have an explanation from our 773 texter who doesn't like potatoes. We have more information. So we're going to continue talking about this as well. If you have calls, feel free to dial in during the break. I'll give that number again. It's the same for text or calls, 312-981-7200. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio, back right after this on WGN. It's better, but it's not enough to get rid of I Am 16 Going on 17 out of my head. Hannah Stanley here, filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. I'll be with you guys until 5 a.m. when I turn you over to Paul, who is in for the opening bell. You guys, robust topic. Super, super happy to be, one, validated in people telling me they don't like the sound of music either. I feel like we should have a club. Find me on Facebook. You can find me at that Hannah Stanley or just Hannah Stanley, and we can talk about which channels it's on so we can avoid them and block them. I hate the sound of music. Tell me what you don't like that you feel everybody else likes. Examples. People have been texting in for the Beatles. That was our first text, I believe, on this topic. 312-981-7200. We have another text. We have to set up several support groups for people. Not that they need support, but they need to have a group of like-minded people that they can talk to. But 224 says this is going to be unpopular, but I can't stand the Beatles. Don't like anything about them. Beep, 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 beep. Yeah, that's what that person's not saying. We have another texter about potatoes. So the first person said they believe potatoes. So 1773 says, I'll eat potatoes that are actually like potato chips, but nothing else. I've never eaten potatoes from the time I was a baby and now in my 60s, so I'm not changing. I feel like there was a fist involved in that. I'm not changing now. I'm in my 60s. And you know what? That's good. I think that's a textural thing with potatoes because they're very mealy, right? There's a granularity to them. I just made that word up, granularity. I don't think that's real. I'm pretty smart, and I don't remember ever using that word before. And someone else from 773, possibly a neighbor, maybe if you guys are single, we'll get you guys together. I don't know. Let Dan know. Potatoes should only be served crispy. Get away from me with your potato soup and potato salad, mashed potatoes being the only exception to the rule. All right. Potato salad is disgusting. I'm with you. It's horrible. awful. So is egg salad. I like eggs. I like salad. I don't like egg salad. Sorry. It's textural. Mashed potatoes, though, I like. You know what else, though, is better? Mashed cauliflower.
Ah, yeah.
Yummy. But you have to do it. If you steam the cauliflower to where you think you should, then it's just way too runny and mushy and watery. You have to understeam the cauliflower to get it to the right texture.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan when I tried it. I as a fan of mashed potatoes, it just...
It's not the same.
Yeah.
We more also tried nutrition, though.
Yeah, and we tried cauliflower rice the other day.
Yeah.
And that was all right, too. But just
because that's just where you rice it, make it into little pieces, and then you can do it just like rice, because right. Then it's not so nutritionally void. Rice is just not great. It's just a filler. It's a filler food. Cauliflower is not that much better. It's white, right? Anything white, it's just kind of like, eh. I suppose you don't want to eat anything with good nutrition, so just have cauliflower. This is really interesting from 231. And by the way, if you have an opinion on anything or if you have a guilty pleasure, we've got a few minutes left on this topic. 312-981-7200. You can call in like John and Patrick did, or you can text in. Dan is taking your texts and he's bringing them in for me. 231 says, I don't find the comedy team Key and Peele funny at all, especially the bit about the substitute teacher. That's like Nick's favorite thing.
Literally was his Christmas sweater a couple days ago.
Did he wear it for the... I wasn't here for the holiday
for the
festival.
Spectacular, yeah.
That's what I thought it was. Man, you guys are lucky that he's not here. Because he would... what would Nick do? He would tell them they were wrong.
He would tell them they were wrong and move on.
That's not cool. This is a welcoming opening... this is a welcoming environment. I want people to be comfortable admitting what they don't like. Because really, if I told some of my friends in certain environments that I didn't like the Sound of Music, I would be ridiculed. 219, I do not care for the Rolling Stones. I always change the station when they're on. I don't like them either. They're okay. They're not, like, I mean, Satisfaction is a classic. But I have never seen them live. And I know people are like, oh my God, the Stones, they're the greatest. Mick Jagger and his dancing. Like, he's so scrawny and creepy. So 219, thank you. I validate you in your choice to not like the Rolling Stones. Couple others that we've had coming in. Nutella. Nutella is a really interesting comment because Nutella is weird. It's chocolate. It's the same consistency as peanut butter, but it's made with hazelnuts, which are not as high in the allergen rating. So you don't have a lot of kids and people who are allergic to hazelnuts. And then it's mixed with chocolate. So basically, it's frosting. You're eating frosting.
Yes.
But sure, definitely put that on your breakfast toast. That makes good sense. And then go to school. Try to learn.
We were downtown for a wedding at the beginning of September, and we drove past the Nutella Cafe that's here on Michigan.
Oh, they just opened that.
Line around the corner. Like, it was just...
Are you a Nutella guy?
I don't know if I've actually ever had it.
I have an... broke out. I had some sort of a reaction. I can't remember. But I was like, I don't know if that's because of the Nutella, but I'm not trying it again. My daughter loves it, but we don't keep it in the house because it just, I don't know. They make Uncrustables with Nutella.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's for the kids who are allergic to peanut butter, peanuts. The Walking Dead. That was another one Patty mentioned. She doesn't like The Walking Dead. I don't either. That is a really unpopular opinion around here. People go crazy for Walking Dead. When they do the Comic-Con whatever thing around here, they always have the Walking Dead guys come in.
Right.
And there's like a Walking Dead cake and there's Walking Dead this and people are all in face makeup. And I don't understand. I've never seen it. I just don't get zombies in general. I was sort of a zombie today when I woke up around 11-ish because I had gotten up. I was not going to sleep. I was not going to sleep. And I got home at 6:30. And so I knew I had an hour until I had to get the kids up for school. And I was like, well, it's an hour. I can totally. So I slept. Got up, got the kids to school, went back to sleep around 9, and then slept for like 2 hours. And I was still a zombie. It's the only zombie I get into. Do you watch The Walking Dead?
I don't.
Nick does, though, right?
No, he gave up on it because he's like, it's a soap opera that just happens to feature zombies as opposed
He's one of us now.
Yeah, no, he abandoned it very much early on. And, you know, that's why, you know, speaking about Game of Thrones earlier, you know, that used to be a show that dominated your news feed. And now, if I see it, it's a negative reaction.
Really?
Yeah. You know, the people who still post about it and my friends' circle are just like, this is awful.
But aren't we, like, didn't that do the thing where they dropped all of the episodes and now everybody saw them? And then now we have to wait 2 years? And we, being everybody else who
the
watches it?
We, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I know based upon some posts that one of the main characters is, you know, he was killed off recently. And
but they do that and then they bring him back. I'm very confused by this whole show. One of my friends, and I say that loosely because I don't know if I can be friends with her. She doesn't like Seinfeld. And I don't, I have so much respect. I enjoyed Seinfeld as a television show, and now I have so much respect for the writing, especially as I work on building a career in comedy. Just the writing on it is so genius. And the fact, she was like, no, I don't like Seinfeld. And I was like, I don't even know who you are. You're making my head hurt right now.
Where do you stand on Friends?
Oh!
When the both of those were popular, we kind of had a, like, there was Friends people and there were Seinfeld people.
Yeah.
Especially since
I was a full-on Thursday Night Block viewer. I didn't get into Friends at first, and then everybody was into Friends, and so it was, like our guest, Dr. Karen Phillips, last night said, you know, you sort of have to do it to, like,
be part of the group.
And it wasn't drugs, so I was like, okay, I'll watch Friends. But now, because it's on constantly on reruns, it's a terrible show. It is not good at all. I think Bennett Wakenight, who we'll probably talk to in a little while because he'll be in for the Morning Bell. I think he was like starting to watch them because he's younger. They're not good.
Wow.
I can't tolerate it anymore.
Those later seasons were very bad. Very, very,
very bad. It was funny, like Marcel with the monkey. That was kind of a funny concept. But I think now looking back at the entire amount of work, no.
Yeah. Definitely became one of those more seasons bad than seasons good.
Yes. Yes. You guys, thank you so much for all of your calls and texts. So many more than I would have, than I probably expected. So I appreciate it. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Facebook yesterday made a statement. They announced that they have optional tools, which is confusing to me because sometimes they say it's optional, but then it just rolls out and you have to jump through 47 hoops that you have to Google separately to figure out how to not use them. But their statement says that today we're announcing new optional tools to help people better manage their identity on Facebook using face recognition powered by the same technology we've used to suggest friends you may want to tag in photos or videos. So the technology has already existed. These new features help you find photos that you're not tagged in and help you detect when others might be attempting to use your image as their profile picture. We're also introducing a way for people who are visually impaired to know more about who is in the photos they encounter on Facebook. That last part we'll talk about in a minute because that's just a totally separate thing. And kind of cool. That part I think is really neat. I have a huge issue with this. I knew that they could photo recognize. They could find your face. They can suggest your friends if you post pictures. Dan, if I posted a picture of you and I, it would suggest that I tag you in that photo.
Right.
It knows who you are. I've gotten used to that the technology is moving forward. We talked about this yesterday, last night, actually specifically about Facebook and social media. It is doing things that are a little freaky deaky. That's one of them, where it knows who your friends are. Here's why I don't like it. let me digress. Here's where it's good. On the surface, I have had a friend request come in from someone I recognized with a different name. So it was a friend of mine who's a handsome guy. And then it was some foreign name. Both the first and the last name were foreign. And it was my friend's photo. And I immediately sent it to my friend like, did you change your name? Because this is a new thing. And so it was somebody who was making up a profile based with this guy's picture. So obviously it was fake. That's good. That's if somebody's using my picture for that, I would want to know that. There is also, what are they, the spoof accounts or where they're replicating accounts, trying to have your friends like refriend you on a secondary account. That would also be good. I would like to know that. I don't like the invasion of privacy type side to this, where if I am at an event that I don't necessarily want to be identified at as far as location. For example, Disney World. When I go on vacation with my family, I don't put it on social media because I don't want to advertise the fact that I'm not at my house. There's things. So if one of my friends posts a picture of me, and I'm in it, but I'm not necessarily, but I'm not tagged in it, you know, like for our all at Disney World. Or if we're at my kid's school, also something I don't put out on social media. I don't know that I'm comfortable with the fact. I guess on the surface, they're saying that I'm the one who's in control of seeing those pictures and where they occur, but I don't necessarily trust that that's as deep as that's going to go. What do you have concerns, or are you more intrigued by the technology?
I've got concerns, you know, just because I think you want to have a private life too, you know, and you know, like you said, there are, not that you're hiding anything, but just there are times where just you're like, people don't need to know I'm there, you know?
Right.
You raise into a whole lot of questions, you know? It's like, if I'm on a deadline, let's say, and my boss sees that I'm at the movie theater.
Yes.
And like, they're like, well, what is he or she doing at the movie theater? But maybe I promised my kid that I had, you know, that we were going to do this and I can't break my promise, you know, and I have it done. I just haven't submitted it. But, you know, they're like, well, they could easily be like, well, I see you're at the movies. Why haven't you gotten this done?
You call in sick.
Right. Right. Which, you know, obviously is one that would be very much one of those with the catch people on.
Was it Robert Urich who was Spencer for Hire, the actor? I think it was. He worked for my grandfather at WGN. This is old school story. When my grandfather worked for WGN TV.
Yes, Robert Urich.
Yes. Robert Urich called in sick and went to the Cubs game, which is broadcast on WGN. And my grandfather, who was friends with the guys in the booth, he was alerted to the fact that Robert Urich was, because at the time nobody was at Wrigley Field. Like, the usher would call you by name and escort you to your seat. That's how. So like, they were looking for people in the crowd to show on TV. There's Robert Urich. Robert Urich got fired. He went on to have a splendid career elsewhere, but that is the story that I was told growing up. We are flash forward into the ultimate version of that, where you can potentially be outed for being places you don't necessarily want to be. Those pictures could have been from a week ago. And now there's a conflict because your friend just got around to uploading photos of you guys at the movie theater, and your boss is like, you're supposed to be working. What are you doing? So now there's a conflict of, you know, time stamping and all this other stuff. It concerns me. And who is ultimately going to be able to have access to where those pictures are? I think there's security concerns to it as far as personal security and, you know, where celebrities are, they'll be recognized in crowd shots. I don't know. It's a whole data mining thing that's very bothersome. And who ultimately, aside from me being in control of my own photo and image, is able to say, to see these? Is Facebook going to say, here's Hannah, and she's at Starbucks, and she's at, you know, all of these places. I'm at Disney World, and I'm at WGN, and I'm in here. How are they going to manipulate that information? Because before, it was only the pictures I posted that I was very, I could curate what was out there.
Yeah, and you'd imagine they take it further. You know, obviously, they take your searches and create the ads around that. So, you know, if they do find you at a school, you know, are you going to start seeing school supplies, you know? And right. Obviously the backfire on that could be you're at a place you don't actually want to be at. You know, you're there for whatever reason, and then they start pitching you products on that, and you're just like, I would never buy this in a million years. You know?
Right. Yeah, one of the most impressive slash scary things. This is a very Disney conversation talk tonight. I keep mentioning Disney. Several years ago, when my son first started going to school, I got a mailer from Disney saying, here are your school district's vacation days. Now is the time to book your Disney vacation. And I found that brilliant in that they ran our address so they knew which school district we likely my child likely attended. Of course, I guess they didn't know if we went to private school. That would be different, potentially. But it was really, there was also a little part of me that was uneasy that they would have had the forethought to look up all of these. You know, they know our kids' age. You register them when you go. There's a lot to it. It's hard to be innocuous. It's hard to be as private as we were able to be in the past. If you have comments and you want to text in for this, or you want to call in, 312-981-7200. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue talking about your concerns with this, because I have many, and I don't think I'm alone. Again, 312-981-7200. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. More right after this on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. Facebook. I've talked more about Facebook in the past 2 days than I have spent time on it in the past several weeks. I've been trying to limit my time on it. And do things that are a little bit more valuable in my life. But right now we're talking about their new release where they're using face recognition technology. The side of this, the aspect of this for those who are vision impaired, really fascinating. And we're going to talk about that. But right now we have some calls to 312-981-7200. Patrick, is it Patrick again? Different
no,
Patrick.
Wrong Patrick. Different Patrick.
Well, welcome to you, Patrick. Hey,
first off, Hannah, you're awesome.
Thank
I love
you.
Every time you're on. I you know, my radio is only turned on to this station.
Oh,
and I
thank
definitely
you.
Catch you every time.
Thank you.
But I got to throw up props to my brother that's driving nights for UPS.
Yeah.
He's getting presents delivered for Christmas.
Appreciate
my
that.
My friend Matt. But again, anybody that thinks that anything they do online, not necessarily even Facebook, but everything, you are being followed by at least 20 fishers, if you know what a fisher
sure.
is. And I mean, everybody gets emails. I literally get emails from people that are friends of mine that there's no way they're sending me, hey, you need to lose weight. I'm 165 pounds at 6'1". Yeah.
No, they're not. That's not real.
But literally, I've gotten at least 50 of them from people. So it's like somebody's hacking into Facebook. I don't know how. I mean, otherwise, how would they know how to get my email address? I have 4 kids, and I tell them all the time, anything you do on Facebook, anything you do online,
mm-hmm.
is going to be followed, and somebody's going to try to hack that. And I've gotten, like I said, so many emails, so many messages on Facebook, and not even on Facebook, just emails. People that would not email me anything, you know, if they want to talk to me, they'll call me. And everybody has to, like, wake up, you know. It's like that at call where somebody says, hey, I'm in jail. This
right.
is your nephew. Your grandson.
Sure.
Right? You know what I mean? Really? You're just going to be like, oh, okay, this is my grandson. I don't know your name.
Right.
You're not your name.
Yeah, it does open it up for scammers, and that's, you know, we're already so vulnerable to that if you're not as savvy, or if they catch you on a day where you're just not, you're not as quick as you normally are. You know, there's days where you're like, I would never fall for that, and yet I did. This is one of those things that's just making it a little bit more complicated.
Well, again, yeah, that is, but have you gotten a call from IRS yet?
I have not, but my parents have. My dad went after them. Yeah.
Did your dad, like, be like, hey, why is a guy that has a Hindu/Indian accent calling me and saying he's from the IRS?
Oh, yeah. And it got ugly.
Saying he's going to send the carry for you?
Yes. It got ugly very quickly. And my parents are of the demographic where they could have, they definitely were being preyed upon. And
that's what I am.
Yeah.
Is my mom's name is Patricia, and I'm Patrick.
Sure.
But yet, I get so many senior citizens gigs where they're trying to get a senior citizen to be like, oh, okay, honey, let me send you money. And it's
right.
like, I purposely will try to keep them on the line as long as possible. And I've had at least 10 of them tell me to F you because they find
because they know that you're messing with them.
They finally realize that I was wasting their time. And then, you know, I mean, again, I don't know how we can tell everybody in the world.
We can.
You know, you got to pay attention.
I know.
You got to snap out of it. It's, you're not. Just because you think you're online and you're in fantasy world doesn't mean that the person on the other end isn't trying to take as much cash out of your pocket as they possibly can.
Yeah, I think
and
Facebook is on the surface, at least, trying to do something good where they're offering this as a protective measure. It's still concerning. Patrick, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it.
Love you, Hannah.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Take care, baby.
Thanks.
Bye.
Hey, Phoenix, you're on WGN.
Hey, Hannah. I really like what you were saying about how advertising is getting a little out of hand. So I wanted to call in and ask if you had heard about the Burger King commercial that had ran where they hacked people's phones and Google Home.
No. Tell me more.
Yeah. So recently Burger King ran an ad where they only had a few seconds to talk about it. So they said, you know, here's our delicious burger. And then, you know, the guy that was on the commercial leaned in and he goes, but... and then he goes, okay, Google, tell me more about the Whopper.
Phone was there.
Yeah, or if you have Google Home, since it's not like Siri where it's voice recognized, anybody with that, with their phone listening, basically, or their Google Home listening, it pulled up the Wikipedia on the Whopper, and Google eventually disabled it, but before they disabled it, people were going onto the Wikipedia and editing it and saying that the Whopper was made from, like, rat meat and stuff. So it got really out of hand really quick. But I think a lot of people kind of got upset that Burger King was you know, kind of hacking their home devices. But it's kind of clever too, because, you know, they don't have a lot of options or time to advertise, but.
No, especially let's say during the Super Bowl. That would have been brilliant during the Super Bowl, because the advertising is so incredibly expensive for a 30-second spot, a 60-second spot. So if you buy a 15 and really get more bang for your buck, I respect that. It's funny you say that, because every time I read our legal ID right before the news at the top of the hour, it says if you're an Amazon Echo user, just say, and I'm like, I'm probably setting off so many people's Amazon Echo if they're sitting there. Now, all of a sudden, they're like, why is Hannah through the radio and through my Amazon Echo? Because you can hear us on Amazon Echo. I'm with you, though. I fully respect the creativity and the use of technology to their benefit. I respect that. Somebody, I hope, got a big bonus for coming up with that idea. But at the same time, it goes into my privacy. I don't want my phone to be doing things. I was trying to find the information. I read something the other day that, you know, we kind of think, at least I do, that Siri and those types of listening device, right? So Siri is, of course, on the iPhone platforms, the Apple platforms. But I think of those as more of a passive thing. Like, they listen when I ask them to. And half the time, he doesn't either, because my Siri is a British guy.
But, mine doesn't either.
Okay.
I say it like four times.
Yeah, I'm like, would you play this song, please? Because I'm in the middle of something, and I've got paint on my hands, and I can't touch the phone, and I really want this song to play. But what we're learning is that Siri is always listening. And based on a conversation that a person had, so let's say Dan and I are talking off air. My phone happens to be there, and we're talking about something that my child is getting for Christmas, right? Let's say she asked Santa for a microscope, which is legit. That's pretty cool. So she asked Santa for a microscope. And then all of a sudden I start seeing microscope ads when I pull up Amazon. I didn't yet Google it. I didn't yet look for it on Amazon, but there is the ability for Siri, or those, whatever, Amazon Echo, et cetera, to still be listening to your conversations and finding out what you're interested in. And now we go into a whole security issue.
Facebook is doing the same thing. When you give Messenger and Facebook the permission to be on your phone, they're also listening to your conversations. And there's been lots of different YouTube videos of people that'll talk about things that have no relation to their life, like kitty litter. They don't have a cat. A couple days later, they're seeing ads for kitty litter on Facebook. So that's very true. And we don't even realize that we're giving, you know, permission for them to listen to our conversations. And that's a little scary.
It is. It is. There, you know, you can pull up different keyboards on your phone. So like, if you have Bitmoji, you can have Bitmoji as one of your keyboard options so that you can just automatically default. You give them permission to see all of your texts. That's one of the things that it has access to things in your phone. And I was like, nope, no, no, nope. No, 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 no. Call me old fashioned and goofy. I just need my normal keyboard. That's going to be okay. Phoenix, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. It was nice.
Yeah, great show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. It was nice talking to you. We have Doug in the Quad Cities who texted in, my wife and kids are always being mistaken for each other by Facebook's facial recognition software. There's bound to be issues with mistaken identity. That's absolutely true. And the other thing is, too, Dan, you and I were talking about kind of playing hooky from work or whatever. There's going to be issues where kids are not necessarily going to, they're going to get busted because Facebook's going to think it's the mom and go, oh, you're tagged here. And she's going to say, I thought she was spending the night at Brenda's house. Why is she
at Brandon's house?
At Brandon's house. Yeah, we went 90210. That's what we just did. Think about this too. As far as personal security, physical security, someone who's closeted, someone who doesn't want to come out to their family as gay or having an alternative lifestyle. You know, maybe they're hanging out with their friends who are gay, but they're not. And now all of a sudden that's going to be seen. That can be, especially for those in the transgender community, that can be a very, very real risk for their personal security. So this is raising a lot of questions in my mind, a lot of concerns. We're going to move on. We have some lighter topics after the news. But in the meantime, it's 3:31. Here's Vic Vaughn. I mentioned just a minute ago that my daughter asked for a microscope from Santa, which is a pretty cool thing for a 7-year-old to ask for. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. This is WGN. Thank you so much for listening. She's recently, I've called her Dr. Preston. Her name is Preston, which makes sense. That's why I would call her that. But I call her Dr. Preston since she was tiny. When she was little, she used to have some blood draws done. And she would just sit there and watch as they stuck the needle in her arm and drew the blood. And then she would hug the nurse. Like, don't feel bad. It's just your job. So I've always known that she was fascinated by stuff like this. So she was telling me that she wanted this like fashion-y thing from Santa. And she wanted these Disney Zoom Zooms from Santa. And she wanted a microscope. And I was like, huh? Okay, I'll make sure Santa is aware of that. And then today when we were waiting for drop-off at school, she's telling her brother that she's very interested in the human body and would like to receive for Christmas something where she can see the bodies, like either a skeleton. This is all happening. I'm like, you can tell me you're going to be a swim teacher, but I know you're going to be a doctor. Because it's evident in the things that you're asking for Christmas. And in that spirit, Dan Segrew.
Yes.
Producer extraordinaire. We're going to talk about genes in humans that most people probably have. Dominant genes, which is interesting because a lot of these things, one of the other of us, because we talked about this a little bit last night, doesn't have.
Right.
All right. So we're doing this as a team. Audience, play along. Listeners, we invite you to text in and let us know if you are or are not dominant or recessive in these categories. Right-handedness. Dan, are you right-handed?
I am right-handed.
I am right-handed. Esmeralda, are you right-handed?
I am.
Okay. Vic Vaughn, are you right-handed?
Yes.
Okay. So 100%, 70 to 90% of people are right-handed. So apparently we all work in media. Yeah, that is definitely the dominant gene.
Nick is left-handed, and every National Left-Handers Day, we spend about 2.5 hours talking about it. So
I just rolled my eyes. I did. I will tell you what is interesting. In my immediate family, I am the recessive. My mom, father, sister, all left-handed.
Interesting.
My brother was ambidextrous until he was probably 8. And then he sort of chose his right hand. So now we're fighting back. But yeah, for the longest time, I was like, are you frigging kidding me? I'm right-handed and I'm the weirdo. All right, let's moving on. Dark hair. Vic Vaughn, Esmeralda, and Dan, you all have dark hair. Yep. I have blonde, which fully I admit that I color. I do. But I was naturally blonde. I was born blonde and am still blonde. So vast majority of the people in the world have black or brown hair. Here's the thing, though. Most of the people in the world live in cultures where that's really, really dominant. Like Indian people were a huge portion of the world's population. Indian, Asia in general. You don't have blonde people. That's not a thing. So more than half of the United States population has black or brown hair, but in certain races, as many as 98% of people have dark hair. Now, Esmeralda, Latinas can have blonde hair, yes?
Yeah, they come in all different colors.
Yes. So while some nationalities and races can have primarily dark hair, our friends, our Latin friends, can be a variety. Because isn't Sofia Vergara naturally considered blonde? because they darkened her hair for the first several seasons of Modern Family. That's what I was. When I read People magazine, that's what I read. That's what I learn. The ability to taste PTC. I didn't know what this is. It's phenylethylcarbonide, which is an organic sulfur compound rarely found outside of laboratories. However, in 1931, Arthur Fox, who was an American chemist, discovered some people can taste the extremely bitter PTC, others don't. As many as 75% of Americans can taste PTC. In indigenous American populations, that number can be as high as 98%. I just had a boy band flashback there by saying 98 degrees. It sounds kind of like a weird genetic trait, but the ability to taste that chemical, PTC, is correlated to the ability to taste bitter things in general. And many bitter things are what? Toxic. Meaning, if you can taste it, then you would spit it out because it would be poisonous. And if you can't taste it, then you would have died because you would have eaten the poison pill, if you will, or berry. Brown eyes. Dan, brown eyes?
I do.
Esmeralda?
Mm-hmm.
Vic Vaughn, brown eyes?
Hazel.
Ha ha, give it up for the hazel. Mine are more green than hazel, but still, I'll fall into that. 55% of the global population has brown eyes. That means brown eyes dominate the five other colors: hazel, blue, green, silver, and amber. I have a daughter with, my husband has hazel. I have green hazel. My son has like gray eyes, which his name is Grayson. So I always thought that was very cool. They're silvery, bluish gray. And then my daughter has like full on brown. I guess she would say amber colored, but she always says they're gold. That's the girly, girly part of her that thinks she's going to be a swim teacher.
Are the left-handers in your family all brown eyes?
Yes, they are. Every single one of them.
Because it's got to come from somewhere, right? So
yes, and my brother, who's right-handed, but all four of them have brown eyes. You're on to something. A free earlobe. Who's got a free earlobe? I do.
I do not.
Yours are attached at the bottom.
Mine are. Yes.
Esmeralda, do you have?
They're attached.
You have it. Okay, so yours go straight down. And Vic Vaughn, straight down or dangling?
I have no idea. I'm going to have to look at that.
Okay, so here's the thing. If it goes straight down like a slope into your face, that's an attached. If it like does a little dip-de-doo.
I have the dip-de-doo on one, and then the other one is a little oddly shaped because I was attacked by a dog, so got a little bit of a piece missing.
All right. So. This is a segment you don't know is coming up, and Dan doesn't know is coming up, but based on a conversation Dan and I were having yesterday, I want to have a getting to know Vic Vaughn segment, and this will be something that we'll talk about later. All right. Free earlobe is, it's about a 50-50 split. It's dominant to have, which one? Free earlobes come from the dominant gene, but the split is about 50-50. So it really isn't necessarily a dominant trait. I don't get this next one. Long eyelashes. Long eyelashes are a dominant trait, including many races, including Caucasian and Japanese. Long eyelashes are definitely the majority, but why do we constantly do everything to like lengthen them? I don't know what's considered long versus short. I don't know that I've ever looked at somebody and been like, wow, your eyelashes are puny. This is something that we should really talk about. I've never thought that. Ugh. Broad eyebrows. This is not necessarily broad across your face, but it's a thickness to your eyebrows. That is a dominant trait. But eyebrows are there, like the actual hair in your eyebrows are to keep sweat and stuff from dripping into your eyes. It's a protective thing. So I get why it would be a broad eyebrow would be the dominant trait, because it is there to protect us and help us survive. Unibrow, however, is not a dominant trait. Just Frida Kahlo. And what's his name? The basketball player.
Anthony Davis.
Thank you. Here's one. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Esmeralda and Vic, if can you do me this? Do me this favor. Put your hands together like you are praying, or clasp them together with your fingers intertwined. Now, is there? Do you have a thumb? Esmeralda, we'll start with you. Is one of your thumbs over the top of the other?
What do you mean?
All right. So if you clasp your hands together, right? So you're like down on your knees praying when you're
a little
kid.
I can answer this question. I saw her, and the first time she did it, they were not crossed.
Okay. So can you just do it as you would normally with a thumb crossed? Esmeralda is like really working okay. on this. Which thumb was over top?
I guess left. Okay. Or I'm sorry, right.
Okay, Vic, which one?
Yeah, my left thumb was crossed over my right thumb.
All right. If it is your left thumb over top, you are displaying the dominant gene. You're in the majority. Esmeralda, you are with me because my right thumb was overlapped when I did this.
That feels so awkward to put the right one over the left to me.
To me, left feels freakish. I don't know what I'm like. Why would I possibly do this? You ever hold hands with somebody and you're doing it wrong? Like you're like, no, we have to switch. I can't have my hand like that. That's kind of what it is, except for your hands have their own spot with each other. It is dominant. And I don't know why they would have figured this out, but it's dominant to have your left hand, your left finger over the right. Well over half the global population exhibit that trait. I don't know why that would have developed to be one way or t'other, but it is a random accident of genetics. Now, please, friends, fold your arms as if you are angry or awaiting other people. Which arm is over which?
Mine was the same. My left was over the right.
Okay. I have right.
All right. Left arm folding over the right is dominant. Ta-da! I again did the right. That's all. That's our fanciness for today. The last one we're going to talk about is a bent pinky. Whose pinky bends into their ring finger?
Mine does not.
Mine doesn't either.
I do not have that
all right.
going on right now.
No.
Do you ever... McFaun, do you ever have
Let's
that going
hope not.
On?
When he okay. broke his pinky in a fist fight with Robert Urich, probably.
I did, actually. My right one. That's true, Dan.
Seriously, McFaun is the most interesting man in the world.
It's a boxer's fracture. It's common if you get invites.
That one time I was playing 16-inch softball with Dan Aykroyd, that was, yeah, that's going to be a story. All right, so that, most of us have pinkies that curl towards the ring finger. That is dominant. None of us have it. Ta-da! And that, my friends, is Genetic Traits 101. That's what we've... we're going to talk about sleeping positions next. After we do this, the WGN forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center today, partly cloudy. Man, wasn't yesterday nice? Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. Again, show flying. It's all almost coming up on the 4 o'clock hour, which will be my last hour here filling in. I'll turn you over to the opening bell and get your Wednesday started off right. We are going to talk now about sleeping positions. Those of you guys who are up, many of you, here's the categories of people who are listening. You can't sleep but want to. You can't sleep because you're at work. You don't want to sleep. Because you got other things going on, and that's fine. Anybody I missed?
Kids crying.
Oh, yeah. Okay, parents who would pay for sleep at this point. Have you offered to buy your children things yet, Dan, to get them to go to sleep?
No, thankfully, they're pretty good sleepers.
Yeah, I offered cars. It's like, I will buy you a car. I meant a matchbox, but they didn't know. It was like, this is something. I want to know how you guys are sleeping. 312-981-7200. Sleeping positions apparently say a lot about who you are. Dan, do you know how you sleep? What kind of position you sleep in?
I sleep on my side.
All right.
With my arms at my side, I guess, yeah.
Like, so you're... Really? So you sleep on your side. Where's your bottom arm?
My bottom arm might be under the pillow. And then
up above you?
Not above me, like kind of propping the pillow up. Yeah.
Okay. Because you don't have a MyPillow.
I do not have my wife has a MyPillow right now.
See? Well, deserved. The soldiers, okay, soldiers sleep on their backs. Let's find the side sleepers. Here's one for the side sleeper. Those who sleep on their sides with their arms stretched out in front of them, that's not you. Okay. That's called the yearner. So please text in your sleep position, how you sleep. I need to know where your arms and legs are and if you're on your back, your front, or your side. And we will tell you about this. All right. So I think you're the log, Dan.
That makes sense.
All right. If you sleep on your side with your legs and arms and both arms straight down, you're literally sleeping like a log. Log sleepers are believed to be even-tempered and social butterflies. They can be very trusting and sometimes gullible. If you have minor back pain, assuming the log position might be good as it keeps the spine straight. Does that sound like you?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. I was reading over the break trying to figure out what I am. Because I sleep on my side, but I've got like one knee up and one leg down and one arm kind of up and around. But I move a lot. I flip from side to side, even though I have a MyPillow. So I think that I'm the half baby, which means I'm reliable. If you sleep on your side with your knees up, but not quite in the fetal position, it's known as the half baby position. People who assume this position are reliable and dependable. They have an infectious sense of calm and embrace change and whatever the future will hold. I am not good with change, so I have to keep reading. I don't know. Here's my husband, the snorer. While snoring isn't a sleep position, it may reveal a bit of your personality. Snorers may be more passionate in their lives, embracing every moment and living it to its fullest. They tend to be affected more than normal by depression, hyperactivity, or aggressive tendencies. Snorers may also... maybe that's just because they're sleep deprived, where they're more aggressive, they're angry. Snorers may also experience extremes between the highs and lows of their feelings. Keep in mind that the next time you're about to scold someone for snoring... my husband snores so badly that it awakens me. And I want to hit him with my iPad, but I really like my iPad. It's so bad.
Has he ever tried those like breathing strips or anything like that?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'm not aware of that. He, you know, I was sick the other day. And then my daughter got a similar cold. So she and I quarantined ourselves together. And then my husband, if I'm sick, he sleeps in the other room. He was snoring so loudly from the other room that he woke me up. Granted, I was ill, so I wasn't sleeping as soundly as possible. You know, when you're like half asleep because you can't, it's the worst. You're sick and all you want to do is rest. And I can't take NyQuil because it... colors chase me. NyQuil's so bad. Bill is texted into 312-981-7200. Thank you, Bill. Bill sleeps on his back, arms over his head, ankles crossed. Ankles crossed? This is very cool. Hold on. I think I know which one this is. Stand by. It's the soldier starfish. Some people sleep on their backs, but not as sprawled as a starfish, nor rigid as a shoulder. Or as shoulder. That's my shoulder when I sleep on it. It gets rigid. As rigid as a soldier, these hybrids known as soldier starfishes can have flexible. I didn't even know starfishes had a military. They can have flexible. And for those of you who rolled your eyes at me, that's fine. I get that. That was not a great joke. They can have flexible attitudes and a go with the flow approach to life. However, they can also come across as wishy-washy and are easily persuaded by others. They are also excellent candidates to be snorers. Bill, are you a snorer? Let us know. 312-981-7200. Shoot, it's time. We have to go to a break. All right. We've got other topics, and we have one of my favorite guests in the world, Fred Weintraub, coming up next after the news. So let's go to this break, and then let's get you guys to the news, and then we'll come back and talk about all things royal. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for Nick DiGilio. We've got just under an hour left together, and man, we're going to make the most of it. I am so excited to talk to our next guest. Fred Weintraub joins us from across the pond, as we are fond of saying. Fred, thank you so much for your time today. Wait, why can't I hear Fred? There's Fred.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. I'm sorry.
You know, it was swimming across the Thames. It took a little second to adjust in the WGN studios. How are you this morning?
I'm so good. This moment in technical ineptitude was brought to you by Hannah Stanley. thank you. Thank you so much for joining us. And for those who want to play along at home, your website, Fred, is worldlyfellow.com. You can get more information. And of course, you see him all the time on The Jam, which is the new program over on WCIU TV, and David Plummer. We love him over there. So we want to give him as much support as possible. Fred, big, as our friend Lord just sang, will never be royal, but man, Meghan Markle's going to be.
Meghan Markle is about to have the ride of her lifetime. And I'm not sure that she even knows how big that ride is going to be. So the story, as the world knows, is that Prince Harry has finally found the love of his life. If you look into the sky, into the stars, and you put some of the pieces together, it looks like this is a perfect fit for both of them, because they're both humanitarians. They both find their quiet time away from the paparazzi in Africa. They act like normal people as much as royals can act like normal people. But don't forget the fact that while we reporters are sitting in Chicago, or we're sitting in the UK, and we're listening to the rumors, they're dating, they're going to be engaged, we don't really know what's happening, because that's not how the press works here in the UK. And so a month ago, when this engagement happened, it happened for the press a month ago. But it really happened for them a month earlier than that. And it's kind of funny to just think that they're regular people, and that they were sitting in their cottage in Kensington Palace, and they're making a roasted chicken dinner. Yes. And all of a sudden, Prince Harry pops the question, and that's how it started. But once he popped the question, and as everyone saw in the international press, she, of course, said yes almost before he could get the question out. It didn't come out till a month later that they were engaged. And now you'll see the process continue, because we've seen the royal engagement, we've seen the official picture, we've seen the interview that they both have had, we've seen the first royal walkabout. But you'll keep seeing pieces of the puzzle come together. So now we all know that Meghan is really in, because you don't get invited to share a Christmas dinner or Christmas day with the Queen at Sangam until you're married. Kate never did that. Well, times have changed, and now Meghan is going to be invited with Prince Harry to share the royal festivities, which is a pretty big event. Obviously, the Queen signed off on this. She knew about this. She met Meghan for tea. So all the ducks are in a line in a right way for this wedding to happen, which we now know will happen on May 19th.
May 19th. I knew Meghan was going to be in, and so the Christmas news doesn't surprise me. When Harry announced that the corgis slept at her feet during the tea with the Queen,
that apparently is a really good sign.
Yes.
That's a good sign, because if the corgis like you and they're not nipping at you,
right,
you're probably in good stead.
Because if my dog likes you, I trust you. And I think the Queen is probably of the same mindset.
I think you're probably right.
Now, what You mentioned that they were engaged for probably a month, and this was similar to what happened with Kate and William as well. They were in Africa where he proposed, and then they came back 4 to 6 weeks later before it was announced. It was their own time to be an engaged couple privately before the rigmarole. And so then they did the same thing with Harry and Meghan. What was interesting to me is that was it probably a day or two prior to the official engagement announcement, the palace announced that they weren't going to be commenting on his engagement status and whether or not that was around the bend.
Yeah, but that's what the palace always does. There will be no official comment. So there's no official comment on anything until the palace is ready to make an official comment. So that's not, you know, it's not a big surprise that that would happen. And, you know, when they send out a presser telling reporters, be at Kensington Palace, everyone pretty much knew, either by the nature of that presser or by what's leaked in the press, that something big was going to happen. But what I think is kind of interesting, and what you learn, what I've learned in kind of watching this all play out over the last 15 years that I've been really watching it carefully, is the royal family has clearly learned from tragedy in the past that they need to do things different in the 21st century. So where Princess Kate, the Duchess of Cambridge, was given kind of a trial period and a training period, so will Meghan. She is learning the ropes, although she's so sophisticated and as smart as Kate is, that they go into this in a different way than maybe a young, naive Princess Diana did. Where Princess Diana was kind of just thrown to the press and thrown to the wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, many would say it was the cause of her demise.
Absolutely. But she William was 19.
William and Harry are not going to let this happen. First of all, they can't take the chance with the monarchy that they're going to make a wrong decision if they can help it. They have to give their partner a fighting chance. They have to do a test in advance. These tests sometimes take a year and a half, sometimes take a couple of years. But they have to make darn sure that before they decide that they're going to marry the person that they're going to marry, that they can fit into the royal form, which, as glamorous as the world thinks it is, how would you know, you and I pretty much, we get up and we say, okay, this is what we got to do today. This is maybe what we have to do next week. The royals will tell you that they know at least 365 days ahead of time what they're going to be doing every day of their lives.
Wow.
That leads to a lot, in my opinion, that leads to a lot of pressure.
Absolutely. And you mentioned Diana, too, and what ultimately became possibly at least part of her undoing. She was 19 years old when they got married. That's incredibly young, and especially to be that rigid and be so much more rigid than they are now. What? I can't possibly imagine to be 19 years old.
I can't really imagine that, because to see the intensity of the press here when something happens from a royal standpoint, it's disruptive. And not in a good way from a press standpoint. And everyone, even if you're in public life, is entitled to some degree of privacy. I think both Prince William and Prince Harry have carved out certain areas where you don't cross the line. Like, you don't cross the line with George and Charlotte. Because if you do, you'll be in court faster than you knew what made your head spin. And I think, even though it was announced yesterday that the Princess of Cuteness, Princess Charlotte, is supposed to start nursery school in January. They're going to leave her alone. They're going to take that first picture of her marching up to the nursery school with her bag lunch and with whatever outfit uniform she's going to wear.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully they're going to treat her like any other kid. And that is really a compliment to Kate and to William in how they're raising their kids, because what they know and what Prince Charles knows and what the Queen even knows is give these kids, these younger members of the royal family, before they have to take the throne, as will be the case of Prince William, give them an opportunity as best you can to have somewhat of a normal life. And that's what they're trying to do.
Fred, we're going to come back and talk to you in just a moment. I want to talk about the process that Meghan Markle is going to go through to become a British citizen, which is not something we have seen happen, at least in the monarchy, ever. That's going to be when we continue on WGN. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio.
For your love, for your praise, and I'll love you till my dying days.
Oh, Fred. Fred Weintraub, the royal correspondent for the Jam morning TV show on WCIU. Thank you so much for joining us from London. We had to go a little Hamilton there for you.
Of course.
Of course.
Hamilton, the show that's about to open.
On the West End.
Now, I think it opens in two days. Tomorrow.
Yes.
And someone asked me the other day, I saw it in previews, and they said, so what did you think of it? And I said, first, I thought it was fantastic. But it's interesting watching it with a British audience.
Yes.
Because, and I can only, you know, I haven't seen it in Chicago, so I can't really compare. But they are, I can only tell you that they're very sympathetic to the king. And
sure.
So it's a whole different kind of vibe as you watch it in the UK, but kind of fun.
The only thing I could liken that to is learning. I went to college at Texas A&M University, and learning Civil War history in the South is very different than learning Civil War history in the North. I can.
It's like they teach you from a different book.
Yes. One, the battles are named different things, even though they're the same battle. But yeah, I've been very interested. I know that the Brits had a big issue with how expensive the tickets were for Hamilton. But yeah, I've been watching their Instagram page for the West End production. I'm very excited for.
Well, let me tell you this: for the guy in Chicago who said, "I'm not spending $700 for a ticket."
Mm-hmm.
We went online to Ticketmaster, and they had tickets for face value. So all of this, you know, I think it's kept like anywhere in the world. If you're at the right place at the right time, and you happen to have a little luck on your side,
yes,
you can get some face value tickets and be watching a great show.
It is worthwhile.
Or you could spend £10,000 and probably sit in the first row under, you know, right next to the king. Whatever you choose.
There you go. Well, we are very interested here in the States. Based on your knowledge of our reaction here in America to an American girl, Northwestern graduate, by the way, here in Chicago. But there really is kind of the Markle sparkle fever. Everybody's really into the story. Is it as big of a deal? Because Harry is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6th in line for the throne once the baby is born. Kate, of course, is pregnant. Is this a thing that the UK cares about?
I would say that, yes, it's a thing. It's not as big a thing yet because it's all part of a process.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably bigger in the universal world, in America, around the world, in part because Prince Harry is so popular.
Mm.
You know, as you said, he's going to become 6th in line to the throne. But when you look at the polls, besides the Queen, he's the most popular royal that there is.
Hmm.
So the urge of craziness will happen, but it's a little too early for that to happen right now. So you see it on the newsstands. You don't really see a lot about it in the news right now, except when there's a specific announcement. Like this week,
the date.
The two big news stories were one that Harry got promoted to Captain General of the Royal Marines, which his grandfather, Prince Philip, had served for 64 years. So he's getting all these rankings. You will see that Meghan and Harry will probably get a Duke and Duchess ranking as it gets closer to the wedding, which will be a gift from the Queen. But then as it gets closer and closer, the craziness will really start. And the wedding will be, if you compare it to William and Kate's wedding, it will be a much more private affair. It will not be an official function. You know, there's no word yet on whether it'll be televised on TV. It will be at Windsor Castle in St. George's Chapel, which is dear to the Queen because that's like her summer home, 2025, an hour away from Buckingham Palace. She spends every weekend there. So it will really be more of a family affair. And one interesting story is when William and Kate got married, they went to the Queen, and you know that was a huge wedding at Westminster. And they said to the Queen, here's our problem. We see this whole guest list. We don't know anybody on this guest list, and which is kind of funny. And the Queen turned to them, and they said, William, this is what my recommendation is. So it's alleged that what she said to him was, rip up the guest list, the official guest list, start with your friends. Put down your friends that you want to have at the wedding, and then we'll go from there and figure it out. And so it's kind of cool to have a grandmother who's not only the queen who is telling you, look, it's about family, it's about your friends, and then we'll fit in all this royal stuff. But I think you'll see a totally different atmosphere, but you'll see an excitement on May 19th. And the other interesting news story this week was, so Prince William is a patron of the FA Cup, which is the big soccer match or football match, as we say here, at Wembley Stadium. And it happens to be on May 19th. So now he's got to decide, am I going to attend my brother's wedding, probably as the best man, or do I have to go do an official function and be at this soccer match? And so it came out later in the day that, of course, they figured that out. It'll be a morning wedding, and it'll be an afternoon probably breakfast or lunch, and then William will have plenty of time to be driven the 20 miles to Wembley Stadium and open up what he needs to open up from a ceremonial standpoint. But he knows family has to come first, and even with royals, there appears to always be a way to work it out if you want it.
I feel like they could make a call. You know, around here we always go, I got a guy, I'll make that work. That's not a problem. When you're the royal family, you can flex some schedules. I'm very intrigued with the process of her becoming a British citizen. We've never seen an American royal marry into the royal family. Of course, Windsor abdicated the throne to Mary Wallace. And that's, you know, one of those love stories of the ages because he did give up his birthright to do this. What is that? What does that process entail for her? Does she renounce her American citizenship? What's the process?
Well, what I think happens right now is, first of all, I think she can have dual citizenship, but she will become a UK citizen. It's not the kind of thing that happens overnight. And there's a list of credentials that you have to pass. One of them is an amount of money that you'll be able to earn if you live in the UK.
Okay.
Another one is who's your supporter in the UK, which of course
I feel like she's got a guy.
Prince.
Yeah.
I think she's got a guy, and I can't imagine, I think I read somewhere that it's £18,000. I can't imagine that she can't, you know.
They can figure that out.
She'll just take her petty cash from her last episode of Suits and she'll, you know, she'll figure out how to bring it all together. But it is a process. Now, the bigger question that I don't really know the answer to is, when you're about to be a member of the royal family, is there a fast-track way of getting this done?
Right.
And you've got to think that there probably is, that she will go through, you know, what every other citizen goes through. And it's a process. I don't think it's a year's process, but it's not a 20-minute process. It's not like going to City Hall in downtown Chicago and getting your license renewed, where if you can stand in line for 20 minutes to 2 hours, you get that done. There clearly is a process, and there are probably questions that you have to answer, but she will get it all done, and I can't imagine that is going to stand. I can't imagine that that's going to stand in her way. The other issue is, I think she also has to be baptized in the Church of England, which will also happen before she gets married. So she's got a few things on her list that she's got to get done. But you would think with a little help from an influential grandmother
yes.
that she'll be able to make it all happen.
I think you are right. Fred, I can't wait to talk to you about this more as the wedding approaches. Thank you so much for your time. Our guest, Fred Weintraub, Royal Correspondent for the GM Mornings on WCIU. And you can visit his website at worldlyfellow.com. Fred, thanks again.
Nice to be with you. I'll talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks so much. It is 4:30, everybody. Here's Vic Vaughn. Hannah Stanley filling in tonight for the last 25 minutes, I'm so bummed, of the Nick DiGilio show. Nick D will be back with you guys mid-next week, I believe. I think he might not be back until the new year. I know I will be on filling in for him on the 26th, so the AM on the 26th I will be back with you guys. So nice. I've had such a great two shows, and it's been so pleasant and lovely to talk with you all. Thank you so much for having me. I want to ask another question. And this one, I think, could really spawn a lot of conversation and debate. Dan and I actually started having a big conversation about this off air, and then we both went, save it for the show, which is what we say when we don't want to have too much of a conversation before the topic actually is on the air. 312-981-7200. You can text in or call in to be a part of our conversation on this. Should you be best friends with your spouse? And Dan, right away, what did you say?
To answer that question, I think, yes, that is a appropriate goal. I would say that Eileen...
who is your wife?
My wife is kind of my default best friend. Now, it's not a slight against her, because if she wasn't, you know, the first person I said when I said, who's your best friend, she would be, you know, 1A.
Right.
But, you know, one of the things that kind of struck me was, you know, I've been trying to get together with my guy friends from high school for like a month and a half. We all have kids now. We're all very busy. And so it's tough to like find a time where like, all right, we're all going to meet up here at a bar and have a good time. And, you know, with Eileen, we have very different personalities. And so, you know, it's one of those things where my guy friends, there are things that like, I could say to them, you know, I can just utter a phrase and they know exactly what I'm talking about. We don't have to say a word more and it's just done. Whereas Eileen, because of our different personalities, I'd have to dig in a little deeper, explain more and things like that. Not a bad thing, but just kind of different, you know?
Right.
And obviously because we're parents and because we have such big families, we're around each other a lot, you know? And so because of that, she's my best friend because I don't want to go on adventures without her. You know,
right.
And that's kind of what a best friend is. But at the same time, another part of me is like, we have very different musical tastes. And so, you know,
like one of you would be at Dave Matthews.
Yes. So, you know, or she's a big country music fan and I am not. And so, you know, it's one of those things where like going to a concert is a best friend type of thing. But when we're talking about concerts, it's always like, all right, I can go to that one. But there might be somebody else that you would have more fun with who would be more into it than I would be.
All right.
You know what I mean? That's kind of where I'm coming from.
But putting her pleasure in that event ahead of just going because you're married, I think is sort of a best friend type thing.
Right. It's definitely like one of those like snakes its own tail, you know?
Right.
It's where it's kind of like it. She makes me a better man. So, I mean, that's what best friends should do, you
right.
know? I mean, so.
But you're saying that you also have friends that fill kind of different categories. This is an interesting article. This was in the Tribune, right? I think.
Yes.
One of the more famous couples that actually split over the past year was Anna Faris, and Chris Pratt. 8 years of marriage, they had a child who went through the NICU, who was in the NICU, because he was born prematurely, which I had a soft spot in my heart for that because both of my kids were in the NICU. But she wrote in an essay for a memoir that she didn't consider him to be her best friend. She said, the idea of your mate being your best friend is overhyped. She said, I really believe that your partner serves one purpose and each friend serves another. I am very fortunate because my husband and I are very, very close, fully partners and teammates on certain things. And there are things like, conversations that we can have where I can quote a movie and he knows exactly what I'm talking about, or we hear the same quote and we look at each other because we can't say it out loud in front of the kids or whatever. So there is, definitely a friendship that is there. And I think that that's very healthy. But I also know he's very, very close with high school friends like you are. So I think that there's different categories. There's different gaps in that can be filled by different people. And I think it's the healthiest when you're not threatened by those other friendships.
Yeah. And I think, again, you know, it's all about timing. Because I've had this kind of like desire to get with my friends and I haven't seen them in so long, you know, I wonder if we had seen each other regularly, like if I had seen them in November and then I saw this article yesterday, I would have been like, oh yeah, Eileen's my best friend. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's also your station in life, because to your husband's friend's credit, you know, I mean, they've known each other for decades now. And, you know, I've known my best friends since 1995, and a big part of us being able to say something to each other and not having to speak anything else is because we've known each other for all this time.
Right. When Tommy Boy came out, you guys went to the theater together.
Right, exactly. And so, you know, Eileen and I met in 2008, so we're closing in on 10 years. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's also a question of like, well, in 10 years from now,
you'll have 20 years of history.
Exactly. It'll be like, remember that time, Emily? And then that'll be it, you know?
This article is very interesting by saying, Dusty Williams, a mental health counselor in Jacksonville, Florida, says it's, never before in history have we expected our spouses to be all things to us, our passionate lover, our best friend, therapist, provider, equal partner, and co-parenter. It's not realistic, nor is it healthy. And so, their stance is that depending sort of on your definition of what your best friend is, really is whether or not it's healthy. I think where you're coming down in saying Eileen is 1A is more in that along the lines of healthier options. And I agreed with Anna Faris. If she didn't consider him to be your best friend, that's fine. But I definitely feel like there's categories of people that you can go to for different things. I don't think you should have somebody that you dump on, right? We've all gone through that stage in our life where we just want the person who will listen while we complain about our mom or, you know, whatever that is. Even in high school, we had somebody. That's not necessarily fair. But as we become adults, especially if we're in healthy relationships, there's going to be the friend that you can go to the concert with. There's going to be the friend that you can nerd out over, you know, playing a video game with or whatever. There's going to be different like puzzle pieces. You know, this is a part of my life that gets fit by this person. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they're your best friend, but they're your best friend at that. That's what I'm establishing is probably the healthiest based on this article.
Yeah. I mean, and that is definitely you do end up, because I'm at that point where we're in a position where we're not taking on new friends, you know, like we've got our group of friends and it's a solid group, it's a big group, and like if somebody comes in and they fit in naturally, yes, but you know, we're not actively going out and participating sure. in big group activities.
You're not speed dating for friends.
Right, exactly. But, you know, in a couple of years my daughters will be going to school and like we're going to have the, you know, like our kids are in kindergarten together, friends.
School's
know?
A thing.
Yeah.
School is a big thing, and school is very interesting because you'll realize that the other parents, while you're all grown up, it's just like high school. There's so many parental cliques, and there's categories of moms where there's yoga pant mom and there's workout mom, and they're not the same mom. Like everybody's just kind of trying to figure out where they fit in. It's very, very interesting. There's like the mom that is super laid back and very nice and super supportive, and like everybody wants to be friends with her. And then there's like a fight. It's exactly like the popular kids in high school. The only difference is we don't have lunch tables. It's very strange. But yes, you'll find the kids that you have play dates or whatever they're called in 3 years when your kids go to start going to school, that's, you know, you'll start finding parents that you like better and pushing your kids to be friends with their kids so that you can, you know, have a little bit more social time, built in as well. There are couples, and one of them is in this article. Julia Rowan sits 1 foot away from her husband in their home office, but after the day of work is over, she doesn't want to break from her best friend. She said she worried about working together and how it would affect their friendship because they spend so much time together, but they said it, she says it's actually strengthened their friendship. They have so much in common with their work day, shared stress, shared understanding of what's going on. That's a lot of what happens when my husband comes home from work, is sort of a decompression phase. But there are things where he's like, and this project has gone awry. And I'm like, I don't know what project you're talking about. So I either have to just nod understandingly and say, gosh, I'm sorry. What can I do to help? Or then we have to go through this whole explanation period where he tries to tell me, and I want to be as supportive as possible, but sometimes I don't care what project he's working on.
Sure. You know, and you kind of tying into that point, you know, Steve and Johnny.
Yes.
Obviously, one of the questions they would get most asked often is just like, you know, how do you work with your spouse and then go home? And their comment always was like, well, if you don't want to spend all this time with your husband or wife, why are you married to them?
Right.
You know? And that was their answer to those questions. Like, they love being around each other 24/7. And
I love being around them 24/7.
Yeah. They were great.
They are so great. And the most beautiful couple. Oh, Steve and Johnny. But they are a great example. We should have had them on to talk about this. This would have been great.
Yeah.
Oh, next time. Michelle Obama, on their 25th anniversary, posted on Instagram, "You're still my best friend." I want to be able to say that to Steve. And I think the way our relationship works is it's so much more based on friendship. Many people are going into their relationships more as friends. That's more the directive that I'm seeing generationally than this whirlwind romance and marriage.
It would be interesting to see how many people started as friends and then became married. Eileen and I were dating pretty much from the get-go. Like, we met and then started dating. You know, our first date was 3 or 4 days later.
Yeah.
So we never had a friend period. But yeah. Every relationship I had up until that point was friends that involved, and obviously those didn't work out. So.
Right. Right. And you've been married for several years. This is, you've gotten over several humps of the high divorce rates.
Right.
Because I think 2 years is the one of the highest rates of
divorce. That makes sense.
So really, it's what works best for you is what the Tribune, pardon me, what the Tribune taught us. Hannah Stanley filling in for Nick DiGilio. I get 8 more minutes with you guys. It has been such a pleasure to spend the last 2 nights with you and with Dan.
Yeah, it's been fun. Thank you, Anna.
It has. Thank you. Dan, we were talking last night about how all these years we've known each other, and I've done shows that you produced, but I was never hosting those shows.
Right.
So this is, what a thrill. It's been great.
Yeah.
You guys are getting up. You're awake. If you've been asleep and you're getting up, it's probably because you have to go to work. And it's likely you're going to jump in the car. You just heard Esmeralda give out our traffic. Boy, there's a way that we can fix this. Right now, the traffic's not bad. Couple of hot spots. But those smart folks at MIT, the researchers, in a paper published this week, have a solution to help alleviate stop-and-go driving. Because the worst is when you're like cruising along at a normal speed, especially on the highway, which is why you take the highway. It's supposed to be why you're supposed to take the highway, because y'all move. There's no... I just said y'all. I just went Texan on everybody. I'm sorry. Unless you're from Texas, and then you're welcome. But the whole point is to keep moving in a flow of traffic. And for whatever reason, somebody spills their coffee or gets an alert on their phone or whatever, they tap the brakes. And then everybody behind them for like 20 minutes does the same thing. There are these phantom phantom stops, phantom traffic jams, where they everybody stops for no apparent reason. So Berthold Horn, who is the co-author of the report and a professor at MIT's Computer Science and Artificial Intelligence Laboratory, said if one car suddenly breaks, the car behind it has to brake, and so on and so on. It's like a shampoo commercial. The braking distance increases with distance until a car actually stops. He proposes redesigning cruise control feature on your car to consider the space in front and behind your vehicle. Last night, Dan, we were talking about your fancy minivan because you went with like the deluxe version that has the heated steering wheel. Whoop, whoop for heated steering wheels.
Indeed.
Do you have the like automatic stopping or does it brake?
It does not have that feature.
Okay. Mine has a feature where it keeps you at a consistent distance, and you can set it to be medium distance, low distance, high distance. So, you know, depending on your rate of speed, you would want to be further away.
Right.
My husband hates it. Hates it. Because it throttles us back.
Sure.
You know, it brings us down if we're on the highway and we start approaching up on a vehicle. But if you're passing, there's reasons why it's not ideal. So that does exist. And it's in several different types of vehicles, but keeping the same distance between the vehicle in front and the vehicle trailing is the key, because not everybody has, if everybody had the technology that I have, then we would all be safer because it would stop us automatically before doing that. But I can't necessarily stop the car behind me from getting too close. So the technical name for the traffic busting technology is called bilateral control. That sounds psychological. The problem is that enough drivers have to adopt the technology. And with older vehicles on the road, it's going to be, one, it's going to have to be something that's standard because not everybody's going to pay for it or want to pay for it, nor be able to pay for it. So it's going to have to be a standard technology. And we're going to have to go through the time period where the older vehicles are leaving the road. And so it's just rolling out and being adopted. So for there to be an immediate impact on traffic, millions of existing vehicles would need to be retrofitted, because that always works well. You ever put a sunroof into your car?
No, but I don't think it could be good.
Not gonna leak. I can assure you it's not going to leak. It's going to leak. So retrofitting isn't always great. Horn's group will next examine what percentage of drivers need to use bilateral control for the benefits to be seen. That's a little bit everybody getting inoculated, getting their vaccines. You need a certain percentage of the population for it to work. Horn acknowledges many drivers may not wish to pay to retrofit their car with bilateral cruise control, but the U.S. government, he believes, any sentence that starts with this from a researcher, that always turns out well. The U.S. government should require automakers to include it, given the positive impact on congestion, public health, and pollution. National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has not yet researched the technology, according to a spokesperson, to make vehicles capable of bilateral control. You would have to add a camera in front of the vehicle. Like I said, that technology exists and is in some of the vehicles, but you'd also have to have one in the rear and enhancing advanced cruise control options. So these cameras would automatically measure the distance to the surrounding vehicles and maintain a steady gap. The system could also work with radar sensors. Can't we just do the same thing with magnets? Can't we just put like opposite magnets so that we literally cannot crash into each other? Done. I solved it. Thomas the Tank Engine just made our traffic problems go away.